begin today by talking about cervical cancer with Dr. Pamela Munster, who is the ambassador for the Chance to Change campaign with Zuleika Hospitals here in the UAE. She's professor with the Department of Medicine, Hematology, Oncology at UCSF and the director and co-director of the BRCA continuation of research. We're going to find out more about that in a moment. She's a very long title. She's also part of the Development Therapeutics Program, UCSF Helen Diller Family Comprehensive Cancer Center USA, and Director of Oncology at Zuleika Hospital. She, as you can tell, brings a wealth of experience to us here in the Emirates. Hello and welcome back to the show.
Thank you. But most of all, I'm here to raise awareness for cervical cancer.
Thank you so much. And yes, working tirelessly with Zuleika Hospitals, you regularly visit the UAE. Tell me how it's going this year, as this time you're here talking about cervical cancer.
You know, we started this campaign 3 years ago now, and since part of the campaign, we offer a free pap smear and raise awareness for a disease that is deadly if left unchecked. We started off the first year and we had, I think, 200 pap smears, and then the second year is 475, and then last year was almost 1500. So clearly there is we really making progress, and and we learn as cervical cancer incidence in the world is decreasing. So we're
that's
right
good
on
news.
Track.
Yeah, really. And we're going to share a story coming out of Scotland when it comes to the levels of the cancer-causing virus, the HPV virus. Their trials and research in Scotland with the vaccination, and that campaign started in 2018. And a team of experts announcing that the Microbiology Society's annual conference in Edinburgh, that's where it was announced that they believe the drop may subsequently lead to a 90% reduction in cases of cervical cancer in Scottish women.
Yeah, quite true. I think we've seen is that the vaccine was initially introduced in 2006, and the reduction of cervical cancer is already close to 50%. It's a really effective method of preventing a cancer that's fatal.
And with the vaccine, when would you have this vaccine? It's for young girls, right?
You know, like most vaccines work really best when you vaccinate young. First of all, for two reasons. The immune response, meaning the ability of the body to raise antibodies that fight the virus, is a lot stronger in younger people. Secondly, you want to do this before you get exposed. So we want to do this starting at age 9 to 12. We do it up to 26 years, but we really want to get in early. The efficacy is a lot better at early age. And then keep in mind, it's like if we want to eradicate the virus, we can't just vaccinate girls. We really have to vaccinate boys and girls.
And to understand, for those that aren't aware, what causes cervical cancer then, and then this connection with this vaccine?
So cervical cancer is really caused in over 90% by the human papillomavirus, also short for HPV virus. This virus happens to be on the skin of about 80% of people. It doesn't go into most women's cervix. It only goes into cervix about 10% of women, and then it enters the cervix cells. And over 90% of women actually clear that infection within a couple of years. So you get a virus that in your young years, you know, typically after your sexual debuts, then it takes another 15 to 20 years for cancer to develop. So there's actually a lot of time to intervene by preventing the virus, by early detection of cervical cancer using a pap smear, by treating cancer early. So really, no one should die from this disease.
Well, someone's texting here saying, what about boys? Do boys have to be vaccinated as well if they're the carriers?
Absolutely, because remember, like if we did a measles campaign and we only vaccinated the girls, we would never really clear the virus. And I'm hoping that for cervical cancer or HPV, we'll go the path of smallpox, or that is essentially been eradicated.
And that could be something we see in our lifetime, you know, in the next few years even.
I think if you can make awareness a part of daily life, and particularly if you can convince people that this vaccine is really safe, has long-term safety, efficacy, and data that suggested that it really doesn't cause any harm, there's only benefit. Yeah, I think this be well within our lifetime.
Now, you mentioned there about how the virus might develop over many years, but we're seeing and hearing more of young people, you know, women in their 20s being diagnosed with cervical cancer.
With every cancer, like the virus enters the cell and then started causing havoc, and there's the body's ability to clear this or counteract this, and you want to engage your immune system. But we also learned that in many women, their immune system has become less well-versed to actually deal with viruses, and we don't quite know what happens to this. Lifestyle choices are being looked at. I mean, is there lack of exercise, obesity, are these methods that causes a virus not to be clear because the immune system is weakened? But then other factors, if someone is immune compromised or on steroids, your ability to fight the virus may be decreased.
So getting that diagnosis and how it can affect you, and maybe you've been affected by this, either you or a loved one. And we'll listen here now, coming out of the morning show in Ireland, a young woman at the age of 25 being diagnosed with cervical cancer.
To be honest, I had not had a smear test in probably about 2 years. I don't think that it was more that I was avoiding them. I just didn't understand why women had them done and the necessity. And there's nobody really that you ask the question of what a smear test is for. People just assume that you understand and know what it is. And I think I just didn't really understand. And it's an easier thing to put off than do. I didn't even know what cervical cancer was. I had never heard of it before. And most people are familiar with breast cancers and the commonly known ones, but I hadn't heard of it before. I didn't know what it was. And obviously it was a shock to know that at my age I could have cancer, because it's obviously something that you usually associate with being older.
Yeah.
And you take for granted that things like that would never happen to you at any age, forget about at a younger age. So it was a huge shock, yeah. It's one of those things that you don't discuss them, I think, well, because it's obviously it's a woman issue and we prefer not to discuss them, but I'm hoping that people do start to become a little bit more open and about it, because it's obviously something that we need to deal with in this country. We have one of the highest rates of cervical cancer in Europe, in Ireland, because our screening process is maybe slightly at an older age, and it's something that we need to start discussing and dealing with, and just to be cautious.
Talking to Dr. Pamela Munster, who is visiting from California, the University of California, San Francisco, where she is professor with the Department of Medicine. She heads up many clinical trials, research when it comes to breast cancer, cervical cancer, which we're talking about today, really dedicating her life to helping women and finding a cure and also developing treatments for those kind of cancers. She works closely with Zuleika Hospitals here in the UAE and visiting at the moment with their campaign for cervical cancer, raising awareness, getting the regular screenings. And it's something with cervical cancer, with the HPV vaccine, we're seeing the results, amazing results really, where the numbers are dropping. We're just sharing with you news out of Scotland, where diagnosis of cervical cancer is dropping. But of course, we were hearing there from a young woman at the age of 25 who didn't really know too much about smear tests, pap smears, didn't really think much of it, and then actually was diagnosed with cervical cancer herself.
Yeah, you know, cervical cancer is a disease of young women. We see cervical cancer as young as 20. Typically, median age is about mid-40s. We see it in older women, but it is a disease of young women. Even more tragic if you think that we could actually totally prevent this. So I think her statement was like, I just didn't know what I should do. And I think the recommendations are very strong now. It's like, we want to have women undergo pap smear within 3 years of starting to be sexually active. So that means like the virus can happen pretty quickly. And the pap smear is a very easy brushing of the bottom of the cervix. We take a little smear there, we put it in liquid, put it on a glass slide, look at it under the microscope, and that gives us an idea whether there's any changes. That's totally painless, easy, no preparation needed. You walk in the doctor's office, we do it. So that should be done every 3 years starting after being sexually active, and we do this until people are about 60. We also do HPV testing nowadays, so that goes with the pap smear.
Okay, you do that at the same time.
Yeah, so the recommendations are either pap smear every 3 years or pap smear and HPV testing every 5 years. So a lot of people really hate the pap test. And so now that if we have the HPV testing, we can get away with a little bit fewer pap tests. However, in a young woman like her, you really want to do the pap test a lot more frequently.
She mentioned there she was in Ireland and saying that there the sort of policy has always been for pap smears being recommended for older women. So maybe, you know, from the age of 35 upwards or 40. So clearly that's not good. So if anyone's listening thinking, I didn't think I needed to go for a pap smear, you know, because I'm young, you do need to go for a pap smear.
No, pap smear is a test for young women. So you really want to get women in within 3 years of becoming sexually active, and so that means it's pretty young, so that because the disease needs to be prevented early, and it's so easy to prevent this cancer, so easy to prevent. It's a shame to miss this opportunity.
And across cultures, obviously your work here in the Emirates, you've just come back from India with Zuleika as well, so for sometimes, you know, these are sensitive subjects that nobody really wants to talk about, this kind of thing. Women, it's very personal. But yet, actually, the more we can talk about it, the more awareness there is. And then, in fact, you can save lives. So how is that going with Zuleika as you're reaching out to people, women in the local community, across the subcontinent here?
So I think that's the striking fact of cervical cancer. Like, the incidence of cervical cancer is actually lower in Dubai and in India than it is in other parts of the world. The rate of death is actually significantly higher because those who have cervical cancer tend to die for it because we don't have early detection. You know, I don't know what to say about the sensitive topic. It's like it is a sensitive topic, but that shouldn't let us let the women die of a disease that could be prevented.
We're going to be sharing with you later some conversation from men whose wives have been diagnosed with cervical cancer. So I know many men listen to the show and are very good at going home and saying to their wives, have you done this? And do you want me to come with you? And that's okay, isn't it? If you're going to have a consultation, take somebody with you, take your husband with you for that consultation.
It only takes really like 10-15 minutes to do a pap smear. It's very quick. So I think I would suggest like go for a pap smear and then go for a nice dinner. That's probably a much better strategy.
Yeah, move on very quickly from that experience. We're going to hear now from another young woman who was diagnosed at the age of 24 with cervical cancer. And what we hear from this girl is the reality of some decisions you have to make when it comes to treatments. After diagnosis, what are some of the options?
I had cervical cancer when I was 24. I had an irregular pap smear, and I kind of went back for follow-up testing, and they did more scrapings and analysis of the cells, and they said it was cancer. It didn't feel real at first. Like, it took me a second to process it, and I didn't tell anyone I had cancer for about 2 months because I didn't know how to tell anyone. I think I was afraid. I felt guilty telling the people that I loved, and I didn't want them to worry and to go through it. So at first I kind of thought, you know, maybe I'll get the cancer removed and it'll be done with real quick. But then I realized kind of quickly it's a longer process and I needed support. So I told everyone at Easter, which was weird timing, but everyone was together. It was the first time I saw my family in person. For me, treatment was all about where am I going to be after treatment? I don't know if that makes a lot of sense, but I was really concerned about, can I have kids? I was 24. I always wanted to be a mom. And that was one of the things that kept coming into my mind. What is, you know, I don't want to have everything removed. I don't want my cervix out. I don't want a hysterectomy because I want that chance. So for me, I'm emotional. But for me, treatment was about just fighting for a chance to have something that I wanted. So I chose a little bit longer of a treatment and more radiation, but I had a lot less taken out, and now I'm finally pregnant, and it was worth it. So for me, treatment was a long journey.
So listening there, 24 years of age, being diagnosed with cervical cancer. And, you know, there are many options, and there's many sort of stages down the line you might be diagnosed, doctor. So listening to that, some of the things that are being raised there. So the options and the idea that you might not have to have children. You might not be able to have children.
You know, having spent my time treating women's cancers and in breast cancer, cervical cancer, ovarian cancer, we have long-term survivors. So my goal has always been focused on, like, how do you live with cancer? Having had cancer, how do you retain fertility? We have done early studies in breast cancer. how we can optimize a woman's chance to have children afterwards. For cervical cancer, we know that surgery can be done to just remove the cancer, and then chemotherapy and radiation therapy is actually feasible to have a baby afterwards, is safe for the baby afterwards. So there's no chemotherapy given that then would have negative effects on the baby. So we really focus very strongly on what's afterwards. And my interest has always been, is like, you know, we sit with a lot of patients, the patients that I just want to live, everything else is not relevant. And my point has always been like, oh, this is all relevant because you're going to survive this. And then 5 years from now, we want to have you have a baby. So what are we going to do now? So the decisions are made then. Really important point.
Really important. And interesting there, the option of like having a full hysterectomy in this case. And of course, every case is different. But she'd opted for the longer treatment process in order to hopefully be able to have a baby. And she is there at the end of it. She's a survivor and she is pregnant. So really good news for that young woman. If we back up a little bit, if you're going to have a pap smear and say you get a call back saying you've got abnormal cells, that doesn't necessarily mean that you have cervical cancer, does it?
No, most calls that are like something is abnormal means like there's some abnormality seen that we just want to have a better test or one more test and have a better look. The majority of them are really just like we want to have a better look. But then there's also like very early changes, and they call this a inside to neoplasia. That means like the tumor hasn't really formed the tumor, but there are changes there that are suspicious. There we treat them, and there's different local treatments that we virtually don't have to remove anything. We just treat the cells for that. And so, and that's really the purpose of a pap test. And what good is a screening test if you can't do anything about it? So cervical cancer is ideal, right? There's a good early detection test, a good screening test, a good prevention test. So this cancer really shouldn't be there anymore.
Lots of people texting in on this, and people as well that have had abnormal cells and looking for advice from you. We'll share that message when we come back. Somebody else asking about side effects from the HPV vaccine. We'll address that and share more stories today. People texting in, Dr. Pamela, one here from somebody who's had the pap smear and is saying, I've got abnormal cells. They were found at the cervix, ASC-US. I had the test, so the HPV test, I guess, and this was the finding, but I have no idea what it means.
Yeah, I think part of being a patient advocate means like you have to actually understand what you have. And I think there's nothing wrong going back to the doctor's office, make another appointment, say like, look, I don't understand what that means. Because the next step is if you have abnormal cells, we need to treat them. But how can you really get treated with consent when you really don't understand what you have? So it's really never leave a doctor's office without understanding what you really have. And it's, you know, I know a lot of patients feel like, okay, I cannot ask one more time because people think I'm stupid, but there's nothing like that. It's like, you always have to go back to ask, you know, what is it that I have and what does this mean and how do I treat this? I remember when I was diagnosed with cancer, and I'm an oncologist, like one would expect I know everything. But I talked to the surgeon and he made no sense to me. So then I made another appointment and went back and said, like, what exactly did you say?
And I'm just feeling for that doctor that knew that they were treating you, Dr. Pamela.
I know. Like,
not to make light of what happened, but yeah, for people that don't know, you are a cancer survivor yourself of breast cancer.
Yeah, but I mean, it really also taught me that, like, you know, when you're on the patient side, it's really hard to actually listen, because the moment the word cancer is spelled out, like, your mind goes blank. And then whatever the other person says is kind of like not there anymore. So it's really important when you go to the doctor, bring someone else, have someone else take notes and tape the doctors. I know a lot of doctors are squeamish when we tape them, but, you know, I had to go home and think like, okay, what did you recommend? And you think like, I know everything there's about breast cancer. How can I have asked all these questions? But the reality is, when you're the patient, it's different. Look out for yourself.
Look out for yourself. Ask questions. If you don't understand the writing on the paper, on the referral, then ask, you know, and find out what it means. Be thorough. Yeah, we started the show with the song Respect Yourself, and there's a kind of running theme of this throughout the next hour and a half of Eye on Health today. Other questions. So the HPV, getting amazing results since this has been introduced a few years ago. Numbers now are dropping. Some could have, you could have the HPV vaccine, which could prevent cervical cancer developing. A couple of people are asking, are there any side effects to this vaccine?
Yeah, but the biggest side effects of the vaccine is you get poked through the skin. So when anyone pokes a needle through your skin to have a vaccine, that's painful. But other than that, it's like it can be local swelling and maybe you feel irritated around it, but that's it. Because we know it's safe to have a baby after the vaccine. We know it's safe for you. It's like we know it's effective. It provides long time, many, many years coverage. We think lifelong coverage for the vaccine. So it's actually a really good vaccine. And we have like now more than 10 years of safety data. So we think this is very defensible to give this vaccine.
Okay, so you're really confident. So put it this, because somebody's texting here saying that actually they've, you know, seen videos, read articles where girls have, you know, maybe shown some side effects, like even some paralysis, and really not having the confidence if there's the tiniest bit of risk. So put it this way, you're a cancer survivor. You have a 13-year-old daughter. Would you recommend she have the HPV vaccine?
She has been vaccinated and so have my two boys, actually. Because the risk for men is genital warts, cancer of the anus or the penis. I don't want my boys to be exposed to that. In terms of the paralysis, you know that when you do cancer vaccines or like HPV vaccines, we always have placebo-controlled trials. Means like we actually, initially we did vaccines where half the group got no vaccine and the other one did. And there was no difference in the side effects. So we don't think the paralysis that was reported was actually was A, real, and B, was not from the vaccine.
I'm going to share with you, we're talking about cervical cancer and we're looking at how the science and the research has developed, you know, something like the HPV vaccine. Now, Oprah Winfrey, she's been talking out. She's currently in a series. She's back to acting and currently on HBO with the show Story of Henrietta Lacks, The Woman Who Changed Medicine. Let me share this with you and we'll find out more about how really medicine developed. John Hopkins were behind this with this lady, Henrietta Lacks. She died from a cancer whose cells have made her immortal, really. This was back in 1951 at the age of 31. Have a listen to this.
What I got to say about that is, hallelujah!
Finally, somebody wanted to talk about my mama.
Oprah Winfrey plays the daughter of Henrietta Lacks, the woman who transformed modern medicine and had no idea. To this day, many have never heard her name.
I started asking people, do you know, have you ever heard of anybody like ever? No one had. So
something Winfrey is now determined to change. Myself.
The significance of what her cells have meant, I think the world needs to know that. And now they will.
Lacks was a young mother of five who died of cervical cancer in 1951 at Johns Hopkins, where doctors found her unique and aggressive cancer cells were the first to grow in a lab. Henrietta never gave doctors permission to use her cells, and her family was never told.
We didn't know nothing about nothing.
Like nothing they'd seen before, those cells, shortened to HeLa instead of Henrietta's full name, were used to test the polio vaccine, develop in vitro fertilization, and drugs used to fight cancer, just to name a few. Her daughter Deborah and author Rebecca Skloot finally uncovered the truth. But Deborah died just before Skloot's book was published. Henrietta's cells were reproduced in labs around the world.
You can't help but be proud of what it's done. So when you think about that, it's like, okay, something bad happened, but something so much good has come from it.
David Lacks now sits on a board at the National Institutes of Health, helping to decide just what Henrietta's gene sequence is used for.
And I think we ought to think of the Lacks family as some of the greatest philanthropists in medicine of all time.
They speak around the country, urging doctors to never forget the patient behind the petri dish.
She was a woman. She was black with limited education, limited finances, and look what she has done for the world.
Kristen Dahlgren, NBC News, Los Angeles.
The patient behind the petri dish. Amazing story.
Indeed. And I know it's a bit of a dark time for doctors. However, I think we need to see the good that has come out of it. It's like we all use Henrietta cells. I mean, they have driven research to ways that we otherwise could not. We made a huge impact. But I think going back is like when we what I really like to is contribute to the many, many patients who have come on clinical trials in our institution and all over the world. Like what it really means for someone to do research and help others. And I've been humbled so many times when patients go on clinical trials that may not benefit them, but just for the sole purpose of benefiting others. And I think we're learning and we continue to learn, and I work with HeLa Cell, so I'm grateful for Henrietta.
Incredible, really incredible. Well, it's currently showing on HBO, starring Oprah Winfrey there, the woman who changed medicine, the story of Henrietta Lacks, the woman who changed medicine. I've been to your centre when I was in San Francisco. I stayed with you and your family, and I went to the Helen Diller Centre. Amazing place. I mean, me, complete layman. I met some of your colleagues who were literally that day there with the telescope underneath and looking at cells, exploring. Incredible work that you're doing.
You know, the beauty of being at the center is where everyone is focused on making life better for those with cancer and reduce suffering. I mean, I have this opportunity. I work with patients in the clinic. We develop new drugs, and then we take these findings back in the lab and study more. So we're going from bench to the bedside, but then also from the bedside to the bench, and it's a hard life, but it's incredibly rewarding as a life. And as you typically see me, like, sleep deprived and running somewhere here or there.
And even working on a book, I believe. Mm. Yes, more to come on that. Lots of people texting in. Let's share these messages. And I think, as always, we want to know, how can we prevent cervical cancer? So there is the vaccine, but it's, you know, lifestyle factors. Somebody here is saying smoking is a contributing factor. I guess smoking is a contributing factor to any kind of cancer.
Yeah, but this one in particular. So we know that the cervical cancers or head and neck cancers associated with HPV are actually twice as bad when you smoke. There is really no health benefit to smoking. I think someone told me earlier there would be no health benefit to me having a Diet Coke. However, there is clearly no health benefit to having to smoke, and that includes like even the vapor cigarettes and all these new things. I mean, it's like it should be really important to know that smoke is not good.
So what might some of the symptoms be, signs?
Cervical cancer can present in many ways. I mean, the best would be if you had cervical cancer to be detected on a pap smear, so really, really early. But then symptoms are bleeding, vaginal discharge, lower back pain, bloating. These are typically signs of advanced cancer. However, like, keep in mind, any abnormal bleeding should prompt a visit to the doctor, and particularly in postmenopausal women, there should be no bleeding.
Someone's asking here, are there any tests that can be done before or after pregnancy which is similar to a pap smear?
The pap smear can be done in pregnancy. We typically don't do it, but we often do it right when in early pregnancy. So if you see someone who is pregnant in the first 6 or 8 weeks of their pregnancy and they haven't had a pap smear and like in a while, we do a pap smear. It's totally safe and doesn't really affect the baby and should be done.
And someone else is asking here, I'm 65 years of age. Oh, what might be warning signs for me? Same.
So now once someone is 65 and they had 3 normal pap smears, they kind of like home free. So by that time, there's the chance of the virus to settling and the immune system not having picked up the virus is almost not there anymore. So when someone's 65, we can do away with the pap smear. However, abnormal bleedings in someone who's 65 would always be a warning sign.
Okay, so just get checked out if that's applying to you. As always, people are talking about insurance, which is always a good point. This person's saying the majority of insurance companies in the UAE don't cover smear tests, which I'm sure will lead to people not being tested regularly. When you talk to people about this, they'll say that, well, you're covered if you've got cervical cancer, but of course, what about the preventative tests beforehand? So I guess if you look at your insurance and you're not covered for like a well woman checkup or pap smear, then I guess what we need to ask Dr. Munster is, what's the minimum amount of time to leave between having pap smears? So instead of having one every year, could you have one every 2 or 3 years?
So the recommendations for our pap smears are now every 3 years up to the age of 60. However, this is a month of no excuses because Zuleika Hospital is giving free pap smear to the end of June. So if you don't have money, don't have insurance and you can't afford a pap smear, come in and we're happy to do it.
Fantastic. Well, that's really good to know. Details are up on our website today, dubaii1038.com/DubaiToday. Always check out our blog post daily for the details of our guests, and of course connected into social media as well. When we come back, we're going to be hearing about the men, the other half of a situation. If married and diagnosed with cervical cancer, the wife, how does that impact and affect the relationship, and how does it affect, and what can men do to help, and how does it affect them? So we'll be sharing some stories when we come back. Raising awareness on cervical cancer today with Dr. Pamela Munster, visiting from the United States, from the University of California, San Francisco, bringing a wealth of experience. She works closely with Zuleika Hospitals here in the UAE and visits regularly. And this time it's an ongoing campaign to do with cervical cancer, raising awareness on the HPV vaccine, which is getting amazing results in preventing cervical cancer. So if you, as a family, as a couple, are diagnosed, and a mother, wife, gets that diagnosis, how does it impact the rest of the family, in particular your husband, your partner? So listen now to some stories, give us an insight actually into how it impacts more than just the patient, and of course how to move forward after such a diagnosis.
It's difficult to explain it and to put it into words, but I couldn't bear the thought of losing her. But the worst thing I think was the kids losing her. You know, you wish it was you. You know, if I could have taken it away and had it myself, then I would have changed that. Just purely to protect her and the kids. It's difficult, you know, it's a horrendous time. You've just got to be there for your partner, you know, regardless. You know, you've just got to try and keep it all together for your family.
Since I had cancer, we talk more about emotional things, about how we're feeling.
You learn things and you look at things differently, you know. And as time goes on, you just get closer and closer together.
Obviously, with cervical cancer, there are issues with normal intimacy. How we dealt with it is we just adjusted. Once you go through so many challenges and you've seen the worst of someone and you've seen the best of them, and that really does help to bring you together. It helps to bond you. You've gone through those challenges together, and it's always because you want to move forward. We created a day a week where it was Daddy's time. At that time or that day, you could do whatever you wanted. That definitely helped. I think that's one of the coping mechanisms which worked for us. I had my bad days like everybody else, but on the majority of the days I was positive. And I think that attitude helps others around you so that they are able to cope as well.
So that was taken from Joe's Cervical Cancer Trust. Check them out online. Really doing amazing work in raising awareness on cervical cancer and sharing there how to move forward after diagnosis and how it impacts the husband, the partner, and of course the family. And I think the lesson that's coming through that, Dr. Pamela, is support, support, support. And in some ways, talking about it can bring you closer together to your family.
You know, for better or for worse, I've never seen anyone go through a cancer diagnosis and not become a better person, if you will, on the other side. It's like we see people discover courage and an ability to enjoy life and an ability to form bonds and accept friendship that you just don't see usually. You know, we never want to wish cancer on anybody, but it does a lot of amazing things when you actually have it. And it is hard to deal with the teenagers when you have cancer at young age. I remember when I was first diagnosed and I talked to the principal of my school, and she was told me my ever peaceful, loving daughter was picking fights with others because that's her way of showing her distress. And again, and you know, you then, as a family, you rally around and you find ways to make this work. And but I have to say, like, it's amazing how people come forward and how many friends they are, and everyone wants to help. And I think talking about it and being open about it really helps.
It really, really does. So, you know, if you can see that light, if you will, and that there is hope even after diagnosis, so not to put you off going through screening processes, because again, we say this every time, early detection can save lives and prognosis can be good.
Yeah, and most, as I said, this is a disease that is survivable, so we really need to do it early.
Okay, so what else is happening at Zuleika Hospitals?
So most importantly, we're doing free pap smear of this month. So that is, and it's not just this month, but it's the end of June. And I think we, as I said last year, we did almost 1,500 free pap smears. It's an amazing campaign because there's no excuses if you don't have insurance. Like, and it doesn't really hurt. And it gets you established. So once you do it, you're done for another 3 to 5 years.
Well, someone's texting here saying, thank you very much for the information today. I'm a breast cancer survivor and was treated here. And as a result of my journey, I've launched a website which offers useful practical gifts for patients and those recovering from surgery. And I will be adding a community care page detailing support groups and info on where to get help in the UAE. This is wonderful as well. It's about trying to find the good in what could be a desperate situation. And as you said before, the amazing thing is how many people, and it is a personal thing, not everybody that's diagnosed has to go out and help others, but it's how you want to process it and deal with it. And it is interesting how some people find it really beneficial to use this diagnosis to help others.
You know, we all want to go out and be helpful. And I remember the thought when I had breast cancer was like, oh my God, I didn't know I had so many friends. People would come from everywhere to be helpful. And there are things, I mean, I wrote a blog once on the Avon website. It's like the things I wish I had known. And I think this is where these blogs really help. I mean, I want to urge everybody not to put negative blogs on the things. Please don't go out and tell all your horror stories because it's hard for others to read this. Share your positive stories.
There's a lot of positivity around this topic indeed. Now, the health authority, Abu Dhabi's health authority, they're recommending the HPV vaccine for girls and young women from the age of 15 to 26 years of age, and to get the HPV vaccine some years before marriage. You'd agree with that?
Yes, we want to do this as early as possible.
And look at the results we've shared earlier coming out of Scotland, a 90% drop in diagnosis of cervical cancer since their HPV vaccine campaign started back in 2008, so nearly 10 years ago. And as you said at the beginning of the show, there really is hope that this could be completely eradicated.
Yeah, I think for this one, I hope this is in my lifetime and not just like an... We're hoping for 150 years of life here, but this is really happening now. And I think the vaccination campaign is settling everywhere. It's like, it's nice for me to see that Abu Dhabi is like routine vaccinations for children. This is more and more incoming, and the vaccine is actually not that expensive.
Dr. Pamela Munster, thank you very much for your time today. Just a quick question came in. It was actually more about ovarian cancer, saying that they've had a blood test to detect ovarian cancer. Blood test for ovarian cancer, is that right?
Yeah, there's a blood test that looks at early detection for ovarian cancer. It's still, there's a lot of work needed with this test, so we're just rolling this out, but it's not as good as doing a pap smear. So the prevention and the early detection for cervical cancer is absolutely solid. For ovarian cancer, not quite as much.
And somebody else here saying, I had cancer cells removed. I had some more cells removed just a couple of weeks ago to see if it had spread. I'm awaiting the results and I'm terrified. All because I put off my first smear for 3 years. But my fiance made me go and he's potentially saved my life.
Most of the cases, even in hopefully this young woman, this mean like is just removal of the bad cells and not more than that. So all the best to you, and you will be able to go through this.
Good. Thank you so much for your time today, Dr. Pamela Munster. Do check out online more information on the pap smears being offered by Zuleika Hospitals. Until the next time, safe journey back to California.
Thank you. Always good to be here.
Thank you so much.